Truth is the daughter of time.
We present The Daughter of Time, the novel by Josephine Tay, dramatized by Neville Teller, starring Peter Gilmore as Alan Grant, with Simon Hewitt as Brent Carradine, Frances Jeter as Nurse Ingham, Rosalind Shanks as Martha Hallard, and Jill Lidston as Nurse Darrell.
I am charged with a double duty. I am, by his will, made guardian of our sweet Prince Edward, shortly to be our crowned monarch. A duty I must fulfill until he reaches years of discretion. And until he attains his majority, I am created protector of this kingdom, given the awesome responsibility of governing wisely and well on his behalf, so that in due time I may hand over to him a prosperous, peaceful, and flourishing realm. In exercising my wardship, I shall need your loyal support. But, my lords, I do not ask for loyalty to me. I ask for loyalty to the prince, my nephew, on whose behalf I shall henceforth act. My lords, as you loved my brother, and as on your honor you owe allegiance to his rightful and lawful heir, I ask you now to swear an oath of fealty to the prince. On your knees, my lords, and each raise the crosspiece of his sword. My lords, do you each severally and conjointly swear due obedience and loyalty to the high and mighty the Prince Edward, your right and lawful liege lord?
We do!
Your Royal Highness.
My Lord Buckingham. You look travel-weary.
I have ridden hard from London. 2 days and a night without rest.
You have news?
Not good, my lord.
Come with me. We can talk privately under those trees. What goes on in London?
Lord Dorset has taken over the arsenal and the treasure in the tower. He has begun to fit up ships to command the channel.
Indeed. Is that simply a wise precaution in my absence, do you think? Or a bid for power? I wonder.
The latter, I fear, my lord. He is issuing council orders in his own name and that of Lord Rivers.
With no mention of me?
None, my lord.
They have absolutely no right. By heaven, Buckingham, I am the lawful protector of this realm and guardian of the prince. Tell me, is there any news of my nephew? He was at Ludlow with Lord Rivers, was he not?
Yes, but they left there a week ago. Lord Rivers has given out that he has the prince under his protection. You know he is marching to London at the head of an army 2,000 strong. Well armed, too, by all accounts.
Oh, those Woodvilles! Yes, they are out to seize the crown for themselves. We must leave at once. I must catch up with him as quickly as possible, or young Edward will lose his inheritance for good.
Why not raise an army on the way?
And plunge us all into civil war again? Certainly not. No, I and any of those gentlemen who want to come with me will travel to London in mourning for my brother, not in armor. It is not too late, Buckingham. But first, my lord, we'll hold a council.
A council? Here?
Here and now. A legal council, as only I am entitled to do.
And so he did.
As protector, he issued orders for the arrest of Rivers and three of his aides and sent armed men to execute the warrants. All four were caught and sent to the north.
And Richard?
Richard went on with the young prince to London. Of course, he was already really King Edward V, but in those times, when the crown had been up for grabs in the Wars of the Roses, you needed a coronation to confirm a change of monarch. Anyway, Richard and young Edward arrived on the 4th of May.
Well, that's very nice and clear. In fact, Richard did just what you'd expect of a responsible protector of the realm and a loving guardian. Now, where's the break in the pattern?
Oh, not for a long time. When he got to London, he found that the Queen, the younger boy, the daughters, and Dorset had all bolted into sanctuary at Westminster. Apart from that, things seemed to have been normal.
Did he take the boy to the tower?
Wait a minute. I have it here somewhere. No. No. He took the boy to the Bishop's Palace in St. Paul's Churchyard, and he himself went to stay with his mother at Baynard's Castle. Do you know where that was?
It was the York's townhouse. It stood on the river bank, just a little way west of St. Paul's.
Well, he stayed there until his wife arrived from the north on June the 5th. And then they went to stay in a house called Crosby Place.
Still called Crosby Place. Well, been moved to Chelsea. So, there's no suggestion of opposition to Richard's protectorship.
Oh, no, no. He was called protector in the patent rolls before he even arrived in London. Let me see. April the 21st. That's less than a fortnight after King Edward's death. And May the 2nd. That's 2 days before he arrived in London at all.
All right, I'm sold. No fuss and no hint of trouble?
Not that I can find. The boy's coronation was all set for the 22nd of June. Richard gave detailed instructions, the order of ceremony, the boy's robes.
When did he?
On the 5th.
If he was planning a switchover, he wasn't leaving himself much time.
He wasn't.
And then what?
Well, that's as far as I've got. What I do know is that something happened at a council a few days later. On the 8th of June, I think. There's an account written at the time by a Frenchman called Philippe de Comines. I haven't managed to get hold of a copy yet. Someone's promised me one for tomorrow. It seems the Bishop of Bath, his name was Stillington, broke some news to the council that changed everything. As soon as I find out what happened, I'll let you know.
Hello?
Mr. Grant?
Hello there.
Brent Carradine.
Brent, good to hear from you. You found something?
I sure have. I'm at the British Museum, just through looking up that account by Comines of the Council of the 8th of June, 1483. It's sensational.
Well, go on, then. I'm all agog.
Just a minute while I put in a few more Tempe pieces. Oh, I dropped it. That should keep us going for a bit. Stillington, the Bishop of Bath, that is, told the Council a most extraordinary story. It seems that Edward the Fourth... Handsome, womanizing, self-indulgent Edward. Long before he married Elizabeth Woodville.
Careful, the way is rough.
How much further to the chapel now, my Lord Bishop?
The night is very dark, my lady, or you would see how close we are.
Pity there's no moon.
Better so, Your Majesty, considering.
I suppose so. What do you think, Eleanor?
I'd have all the world know our business, my lord.
I dare say you would, but I fear it would scarcely be politic.
Politic? You are the king, aren't you? Why can't you marry whom you please?
Hush, my darling, I am marrying whom I please.
Oh, but like this, in secret, in the dead of night, as if we're committing a crime.
I tried to explain, my love. My cousin Warwick won me the crown. He holds the power. He could unseat me at any time if he chose, so he mustn't know. Is that a torch from inside the chapel, my Lord Bishop?
It is, Your Majesty. I have two priests waiting to act as witnesses.
Trustworthy, I hope.
Discretion itself, Your Majesty. Ah, here we are. This way, Your Majesty.
Thank you, my Lord
Bishop.
Are you there?
We are, my Lord Bishop.
Well, let's get on with it. It's damn cold in here.
Follow me, Your Majesty, if you please. Lady Eleanor.
But, Edward, why must the Earl of Warwick not know? That's what I can't understand.
Your poor little fingers are icy.
No.
It's all high politics, my love. Warwick set his heart on a French marriage for me. Don't worry your sweet head about it.
Can he really take the crown away from you if he finds out?
He won't. and his power won't last forever. Just be patient, my sweet, and soon everyone will know that you are my chosen, my beloved queen.
This will do. Now then, you two, one on either side.
Yes, my lord, I know.
May I commence, your majesty?
Yes, yes, as quickly as possible.
Do you mean to say that when Edward IV married Elizabeth Woodville, he was already married?
To Lady Eleanor Butler, according to Sillington, that is.
Ye gods. Bigamy. And all the children bastards. Why had Stillington kept it to himself so long?
Well, on Edward's orders, naturally.
This, Stillington, anything known?
Yes. He'd been Edward's Privy Seal, then his Lord Chancellor, and his ambassador to Brittany, so he was a trusted servant. No reason to cook up anything against Edward. Anyway, we don't just have to take Stillington's word for it. The whole affair was put to Parliament.
Was it, by George?
It sure was. Everything was open and above board. There was a very long meeting of the Lords, sitting really as a court of inquiry.
And that, my lords, on my solemn oath, is what occurred. The marriage I performed was solemnized and duly witnessed. It was lawful. Our late king was therefore, without a shadow of a doubt, already wedded to Lady Eleanor Butler at the time he underwent a form of marriage ceremony with the Lady Elizabeth Woodville, now his widowed queen.
And that was held in secret too, my lords, as you will recall. The council only came to hear of that some time after the event. Secret ceremonies seem to have been something of a penchant of our late monarch. You say the covert marriage that you solemnize was with a Lady Eleanor Butler. Where is the lady, my Lord Bishop?
Alas, my lord, she has been dead these many years. She took the veil a year or two after her wedding. She could not have been more than 20 years of age at the time, and she lived in retirement until her untimely death. The mother superior has deposed that she faded away and died of a broken heart.
Precisely. You say that marriage you performed was duly witnessed, my Lord Bishop. Who were the witnesses? Can you produce them?
Indeed I can, my lord. Both witnesses are present and await your lordship's pleasure.
Let them be summoned.
That hearing took place on the 9th of June, and a report was immediately put in hand. On the 10th, Richard sent a letter to the city of York, where his support was rock solid, asking for help.
Ah, trouble at last.
Yes, and the danger must have been real. 10 days later, on the 20th, he went to the Tower with a small body of retainers, interrupted a meeting of conspirators, and arrested 3. Lord Hastings, Lord Stanley, and guess who?
Well?
John Morton, Bishop of Ely.
Aha. I thought we'd arrive at Morton sooner or later.
Only one of them was beheaded, Lord Hastings.
Yes. According to the sainted Moore, he was rushed down to the courtyard and beheaded on a log.
Rushed? Nothing. The execution was a week later. The date's in a letter written at the time.
And what happened to Stanley and John Morton?
Stanley was pardoned.
Oh, no.
Why are you groaning?
Oh, poor Richard. That was his death warrant.
What do you mean?
Stanley's decision to go over to the other side was what cost Richard the Battle of Bosworth. He deserted and took half an army with him. Odd, isn't it, eh? If Stanley had gone to the block like Hastings, Richard would have won the battle. There'd have been no Tudors, and the hunchbacked monster would never have been invented. On his previous showing, he'd probably have had the best and most enlightened reign in history. What was done to Morton?
Nothing.
Another mistake.
I've no more money. I'm coming round. Be with you in quarter of an hour.
You know, it strikes me Richard's ambition was to put an end to the York-Lancaster quarrel once and for all.
What makes you think that?
Oh, his coronation lists, for one thing. It was the best-attended coronation on record. Almost no one stayed away, Lancaster or York.
That would certainly explain his leniency to Stanley.
Was Stanley a Lancastrian, then?
No, but he was married to a rabid one, Margaret Beaufort.
Margaret Beaufort. That name rings a bell.
camp.
It is. Henry the VII's mother.
You actually mean to say that Lady Stanley was Henry's mother?
She was. By her first husband, Edmund Tudor.
But Lady Stanley had a place of honor at Richard's coronation.
Poor Richard. He didn't work.
What didn't?
Magnanimity. So Parliament accepted Stillington's evidence.
They did more. They incorporated it into an act giving Richard the legitimate title to the crown. It was called Titulus Regius. There was no reason for Stillington to say anything while Edward was alive. After all, Lady Eleanor Butler wasn't around. She died quite early on. But when it came to the succession, he simply had to.
So the children were declared illegitimate in open Parliament, and Richard was crowned. Mm-hmm. Was the Queen still in sanctuary?
Yes, but she'd let the younger boy join his brother. They were both living at the Tower. And that seems to be all to date. But here's the payoff. You know that act, Titulus Regius?
Yes. What about it?
Well, when Henry the VII came to the throne, he ordered that the act should be repealed without being read. More than that, he ordered that the act itself should be destroyed. He even forbade any copies to be kept. Anyone who kept a copy was to be fined and imprisoned indefinitely.
But why? What possible difference could it make to Henry?
I haven't a clue. But don't worry, Mr. Grant. I'll find out. I promise you.
Did you know, Midget, that James Tyrrell wasn't brought to book for the murder of the princes in the Tower for 20 years?
Really? As long as that? It's like those Nazi war criminals. Still, he got his just deserts in the end.
That's all very well, but why the delay? That's what I ask myself.
Policeman.
Yes, but it's important. See this great tome here?
Yes.
It's by a very respectable historian called Sir Cuthbert Oliphant. And it's the story most people believe. It says here that while Richard was on a triumphant coronation progress through England, sometime between July the 7th and July the 15th, he sent Tyrrell back to London to make away with the boys.
Triumphant? That snake in the grass?
Triumphant, yeah. He'd been crowned because Parliament had been presented with very good evidence that the two princes were illegitimate. You can look sceptical, but I promise you the case is quite convincing. Parliament passed an act giving Richard the crown. It was all legal and above board. And the coronation tour was a chorus of blessings and thanksgiving. And yet, during this universal hosanna, we're asked to believe Richard ordered the murders.
Couldn't have all been sweetness and light. What about his enemies?
Oh, there was John Morton, Bishop of Ely. He spent some time fomenting trouble before he fled to the Fens and then to the continent. He tried to organize an invasion by Henry Tudor that autumn, but no one wanted to know. Poor Richard.
Why poor Richard?
Well, his son died the following spring. Less than a year later, he lost his wife. Now, in spite of what you think of him, they say he was desperate with grief.
You're almost making me feel sorry for him.
Other enemies? Well, yes, there was also Lady Stanley, Henry Tudor's mother. Richard had tried to be generous with her, giving her a place of honour at his coronation. And then she was discovered to be writing treason to her son on the continent. But again, Richard was too lenient for his own good. You know what he did?
Surprise me.
He handed her over to her husband for safekeeping. And Lord Stanley was the man who deserted him at the Battle of Bosworth.
The monster doesn't seem to be running to form.
You said it, Midget. Yeah, you said it. That's beautiful.
According to the label, it's about as close to the real McCoy as you're likely to get. Music of the 15th century played on the real instruments.
So this was what kept the Yorkist court amused. Poor Richard. He was in dire need of cheering up most of the time.
He sure was.
You haven't managed to find out why Henry was so anxious to hush up that Titulus Regius act, have you?
Afraid not. It was hushed up. The original draft turned up just by chance in the Tower records years later. It was printed in 1611.
So there never was an Elizabeth Lucy.
Who's Elizabeth Lucy?
Why, didn't I tell you? Oh. According to the sainted Moore, Richard claimed his brother married one of his mistresses, an Elizabeth Lucy.
Oh, that's nonsense.
So the sainted Moore smugly pointed out. And, of course, he doesn't even mention Lady Eleanor Butler.
But why would they want to hide her?
Obvious, because she really had married Edward.
But if that's so, and if Parliament had agreed, then Prince Edward was illegitimate. He was no danger to Richard. Why kill him?
Exactly. Have you thought why that first invasion attempt, the one stirred up by Morton, was in Henry's favour and not in young Edward's? Don't forget it was long before there was any hint of the boy's disappearance. If there'd been half a chance that England would have accepted the prince, surely Lord Dorset would have been fighting to restore his half-brother.
I'll tell you something else. The Queen came out of sanctuary quite soon.
Did she?
And she settled down in London as if nothing had happened. Her daughters went to festivities at the palace. Guess when?
Surprise me.
After, we're told, the princes had been murdered. That's not all. With her two boys done to death by their wicked uncle, she writes to her other son in France, Lord Dorset, and asks him to come home and make his peace with Richard, who will treat him well. No comment?
You know, from the police point of view, there's simply no case against Richard at all.
I'll say there isn't. Especially when I tell you that every single one of the heirs to the throne of England was alive and free when Richard was killed at Bosworth. Mr. Grant, do you want to write a book about this?
A book? Heaven forbid. Why?
Because I'd like to.
Well, right away then. But you've got a lot more research to get through, you know. You haven't even arrived yet at the real question.
Oh, and what's that?
Why, who did murder the boys? If they were alive when Henry took over the tower, what happened to them?
Well, what's the 15th century got that I haven't? That's one of your newfound friends you have in bed with you, I take it.
My love, I am sorry. Yes, Sir Cuthbert Oliphant. No real rival, I assure you. Not where bed's concerned, anyway.
Then how?
Well, he comes close in keeping me guessing.
Where can I put these irises?
Oh, aren't they beautiful? Why not use the jug? I won't want the water.
So Sir Cuthbert's a bit of an enigma.
He sure is. If your two sons had been murdered by your brother-in-law, would you take a handsome pension from him?
I take it that the question's rhetorical. Oh, over here, I think.
Honestly, I think historians are all mad. Listen to this. The conduct of the Queen Dowager is hard to explain. Whether she was tired of her forlorn existence at Westminster and had resolved to be reconciled to the murderer of her sons out of mere callous apathy seems uncertain.
Merciful heaven.
Do you think historians really listen to what they're saying?
Who was the said Queen Dowager?
Elizabeth Woodville. Edward IV's wife, or rather widow.
Oh, yes.
Of course, I'm only a policeman. Perhaps I never moved in the right circles, but where would one have to go to meet a woman who became matey with the murderer of her two boys?
Ancient Greece?
I can't think of a sample even there.
Or a lunatic asylum, perhaps. Any sign of idiocy about Elizabeth Woodville?
Not so as you'd notice. And she was queen for 20 years, you know. How would you play her?
Play who?
The woman who came out of sanctuary and made friends with her children's murderer for 700 marks a year. And the right to go to parties at the palace.
I couldn't. There's no such woman. Who invented her?
No one invented her. Elizabeth Woodville did come out of sanctuary and did accept a pension from Richard. Her daughters did go to parties at the palace, and she even wrote to her other son to come back to England and become friends with Richard. And all Oliphant can give, by way of explanation, is that she was bored.
Well, what's your theory?
I'm a policeman. The obvious explanation is most likely to be the correct one. Anyway, until something better shows up. And to me, the obvious explanation is that the boys were alive and well. In fact, no one at the time ever suggested otherwise.
You think, then, you really soberly think, as a policeman, that Richard didn't have anything to do with the boy's death?
I'm quite sure that they were alive and well when Henry took over the tower on his arrival in London. If the boys were missing, there's absolutely nothing to explain why he didn't create one hell of a scandal.
You and young Carradine seem to be having a lovely time with history. When I suggested a little investigation to stop the prickles of boredom, I'd no idea I was contributing to rewriting it. Which reminds me, Atlanta Shergold is gunning for you.
Me? I've never even met the girl.
Nevertheless, she says Brent's more attached to the BM than an alcoholic to his bottle. She can't tear him away. Watch out. You're responsible for the breakup of a beautiful relationship.
Alan Grant?
Brent Carradine.
Oh, hello there.
Mr. Grant, an awful thing's happened.
Awful? How awful?
Oh, disastrous. You know that monkish chronicle in Latin I spoke of?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've just seen it. And the rumor's there. The rumor about the boys being dead. It ruins everything.
Now, hold on, hold on. Don't let's panic. After all, it's the truth we want. We're not simply proving a theory. Now, this chronicle, when was it written?
Oh, that's just the point. Before Richard's death. We're sunk. I can kiss my book goodbye.
Well, who wrote the chronicle?
Oh, some monk or other at Croyland Abbey, wherever that may be. But can't you see? If people were already saying the boys were dead...
Croyland? Did you say Croyland?
Uh-huh.
Hey, you obviously don't know where Croyland is.
No, I don't. Does it matter?
Does it matter? Does it matter, he says. My dear boy, Croyland is in the Fens, hard by Ely.
Ely?
Ely, I said. Get it? Morton was the Bishop of Ely.
Of course.
He fled there after the abortive coup in the autumn of 1483. Then he skipped over to France. Now, here we are with the rumour in Ely of the boy's death. Wouldn't it be just hunky-dory if the rumour slipped over to France with Morton, hmm? Out with your spyglass, Brent. Scour the records. See if you can find any trace of the rumour in France at about the same time.
Peter Gilmore starred as Alan Grant in The Daughter of Time. Simon Hewitt was Brent Carradine, Frances Jeter, Nurse Ingham, Rosalind Shanks, Martha Hallard, and Jill Lidston was Nurse Darrell. Richard III was played by Steve Hodson, Sir James Tyrrell, Nigel Lambert, Sir Robert Brackenbury, Lewis Stringer, Lady Paston, Miranda Forbes, Edward IV, Graham Faulkner, Matron Catherine Parr, Sergeant Williams, Stuart Organ, Archbishop Morton, Peter Tuddenham, Lord Buckingham, Alex Jennings, Bishop Stillington, James Thomason, and Sir John Howard was Alaric Cotter. Josephine Tay's novel was dramatized by Neville Teller and directed by Graham Gould.